This episode and every episode of LedgerCast is brought to you by Brave New Coin. Go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC to check out BNC Pro. This is the all-in-one cryptocurrency management platform where you can join the waitlist, and the beta is about to open so that you'll be able to officially check this out. It's really cool. You get really accurate listings of all your profit and loss positions at a glance. Trades automatically show up in your portfolio by linking your exchanges. You can manage everything that you do. You have flexibility in this platform. It's really cool. I like to think of it kind of like a Bloomberg terminal for crypto, and I think you'll enjoy it. Go to ledgerstatus.com/BNC to check it out, and thanks to Brave New Coin for being a Ledger Status partner. And while you're thinking about Brave New Coin, check out the Brave New Coin Crypto Conversation podcast. This is Andy Pickering, who interviews folks. Some of them are from Brave New Coin, but a lot of them are experts from the ecosystem. It's definitely an interview-driven show, though. He recently talked to Jack Tater, who came up with the crypto assets concept and wrote the book on that, and it was really fascinating. I've really been enjoying that podcast, and you can download that from all your favorite places and rate it. And if you enjoy it, all that good stuff. Andy's doing an excellent job with the crypto conversation. So I wanted to give him a shout out. With that, let's get to our show. Hello and welcome to LedgerCast. My name is Brian Krogsgaard. I am back today with Josh Olsiewicz. Hey, Josh.
Hey, Brian. How's it going?
It's going great. We have a lot of news and stuff we want to talk about today. So I am challenging you and me to get the price stuff out of the way in 3 minutes or less. Let's go. What's your take on Bitcoin price stuff?
Bitcoin's still sideways. No shocker there. ETH broke up from a falling wedge pretty easily. Good R&R on that. A lot of people caught that, which is good. And that's kind of it. I mean, alts...
Do you think alts are bottomed?
Here's the thing. When Bitcoin goes sideways, that's the best chance for alts to ever do anything. Right. So people are like looking for easy money, and it's much easier to move alts than it is to move mother corn. So that's my take. You know, all this stuff's for the most part doing really well, even things like XLM and XRP. So
yet what has been interesting is that Bitcoin's been sideways ish or range bound, whatever, for a few months now. And it's really just been the past week, maybe, where the alts have started to gain relative to Bitcoin. So for a long time there, that lowered volatility in Bitcoin was not leading towards movement in altcoins. I think it signaled just this complete lack of willpower for altcoins to do anything. In fact, they lost a lot of value depending on how early you tried to get in on that stuff. And when they started turning around, it seemed like the point of like maximum frustration and Bitcoin volatility. So it's like they started turning almost when it was most close to Bitcoin doing something big. And we kind of got that from Bitcoin, but it really petered out, didn't it? So we were basically broke down from 10.1. What did we go to? 94,9500, which was a pretty sizable move, and then popped right back up the next day. So now we're back in jail, right?
Yeah, and it's funny to hear. To see all these altcoin maximalists who like missed the April to whatever move on BTC, like celebrating this recent move. And yeah, I agree. Like you're only doing well as a whole if you're rotating in and out, not even aggressively, just like realizing, oh, Bitcoin's sideways. Ethereum has a chance to move up here on the USD chart. It moved up on the BTC chart pretty handily too. So
yeah, rolling in and out, but also like for no more than like a week at a time and making sure you don't get stuck. Like it's a pretty tough trade out there trying to trade altcoins relative to Bitcoin because your timing has to be pretty dead on. Even a lot of the gains came in the first couple of days of the move. Like, so by the time you do get in, you could get caught on a retrace. It's tough out there in altcoin land, even though it looks like there might be some bottoming action. But yeah, that's kind of where we are, I guess. Like there's some excitement about altcoins for sure, especially that move. What Ethereum had a big dump, kind of filled out the very bottom end of what was possible for a falling wedge and got under 170 for a hot minute. And what it peak at? Maybe 215, 220, something like that?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's a $50 bottom to top move that is, you know, unlikely that people capture that whole thing. I certainly did not, but pretty interesting. So
I mean, that's a 33% move off the bottom.
Yeah, yeah, it was a real
pretty
move.
Big.
It was a real move. So if you snagged any of that, then you probably did all right, especially since Bitcoin wasn't doing much of anything. So now let's dig into what we actually did trading, because that's kind of the TLDR on pricing. I can't speak for you, Josh, but like I didn't take advantage of any of this as well as I could have. And I made a relatively severe trading mistake here when Bitcoin finally did break. So I can go ahead and dig into mine and you can dig into, and then you can tell me yours. Hopefully they worked out a little better. I can think of like three kind of primary trades that I took over the past week or two of varying degrees of success. In terms of catching the move, I did actually catch a little bit of that Ethereum bottom. Like I was buying pretty much under 175, 170, was in on a margin position, even I think in the high 160s. But I closed it too soon and didn't really wait on Ethereum to pop out of there, because when it came out of that wedge, it didn't go fast until it had been out for a couple days. So I didn't take advantage of the margin side of things, but I held the spot until I don't know what it was, over 200, but not all the way to 220. I sent that back to Bitcoin. So that was the best trade I had. And now I've had two that were kind of one meh, where I tried to short Bitcoin Cash. I still don't know if I've ever had a good trade on Bitcoin Cash. Maybe that should tell me something, where I was trying to play it under the 200-day moving average. It had broken down and retested it, and it was in my favor most of the time until alts really started turning there, and then I just stopped myself out on it on a pretty tight stop, didn't lose very much. And then I was feeling pretty bullish while Bitcoin was in that mega tight consolidation. Like it just seemed like people weren't believers in the move up, and then unfortunately it broke straight down, and I actually stayed in. I had enough, like, I don't know what you'd call that, like a buffer in my position ability to stick with it on that move down. But I did get out of it around 98.50, something like that. So whatever, 10.1 to 98.50. Then, of course, I didn't want to sleep on that. So the next day I come back to the computer, and that sucker just never went below that again, just retraced all the way back up to 10.2, 10.3. And I could have lost nothing, but instead I lost something, which was a bummer. So that was not, in total, between those kind of three ideas, not my favorite trading story, because there was a lot of opportunity in there that I missed. How did you play that? Any of that or other stuff?
Yeah, so the first thing, like talking to other people who trade, you know, having multiple accounts on multiple exchanges is very helpful. So like if I'm on Coinbase and Kraken, you know, I can use leverage on Kraken. I can do spot on Coinbase. There's a counterparty risk argument where you're putting all your eggs in one basket if something happens. So because of that, you know, you can take different positions with different time horizons, long-term, short-term, and look at the risk reward and say, okay, like if I got in at 181 on Kraken and Coinbase, using leverage or whatever, you know, I can close one or leave one open or blah, blah, blah. So like that's extremely helpful. And yeah, the falling wedge. Like, so I went long on Kraken, got stopped out, and then went long again on September 9th. And that's, I think, when I bought back on, it was 12 days ago. So it was September 8th on Coinbase. Looking at my previous Coinbase ETH stuff, I hadn't touched it for 4 months. So it was 250 when it was last I sold it. But I don't know. The risk reward looked good. If it dropped below that 175 zone, like it was going super low. So there's a lot of like headwinds from the upcoming fork, which is going to be a disaster. It's going to be in two parts, which I didn't even know. They're probably going to put the Prague proof of work stuff next year and do like the split Istanbul thing. I don't know. The whole thing just seems just really, really, I'd be worried if I was an ETH maximalist personally. I'm not going to short it because, if they're right and it works, like, great, it's going to do well.
You're worried from just a fundamental, you think they're in more trouble than anyone is acknowledging?
Right. And I've always said this for anything. Whenever you change any blockchain, like, I'm only worried about it when you're changing the protocol. So if not everybody's on board with these protocol changes, especially the consensus algorithm change for ETH, like some stuff could happen. I don't know. I'm not like FUDding here. I'm just like, this is a legitimate concern. So I don't think it will not work. I just think it's a massive risk if things go wrong. Like what's the backup plan? You know, I guess you just revert the changes like they sort of did in the previous Constantinople thing. Anyway, so but back to trading. Yeah, so 181, and then my margin positions were kind of gross. Like I didn't hold it until today. Like I, what was it? 203, 205, whatever it was. So like I got a lot of that, but I don't know. The chart's been really herky jerky and like Dalai Lama down up.
The Dalai Lama one is funny to me. That's named purely based on the GIF, right?
I think so. I don't really know the exact origins of that, but like it's definitely not, I don't know. It doesn't feel organic to me. What do I know? Especially that BTC move the other day. To me, that felt like one guy just sitting on the price. It was 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Tokyo lunch hour. And that's the second time that's happened during Tokyo lunch hour. It's just like a massive dump. And it's just all at once, really big size, just moves the entire market. And then we bounce the whole thing. So it's like, I don't know. I just don't get it. I don't understand.
Yeah. It was right on a zone too, where like it was a pretty clear level. So once you got below whatever that was, then like the cascade from there was going to be pretty severe. But yeah, it went and found that kind of macro descending triangle bottom line, went from there. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is.
My TLDR for trading, my non-advice trading advice is use multiple exchanges, use low leverage, trade spot, trade 5X, be patient with positions, hold positions for, you know, weeks. Like you said, that falling wedge took some time to break up, definitely. But, you know, when it did, that's 30%, right? So...
yeah.
It's TA works, folks. That's all I'm going to say.
TA works. I will finalize one thing. I'm curious. This goes back to price a little bit, but as our resident cloud master, what do you think about Bitcoin turning red on the cloud, look, double daily cloud?
Sure. Yeah. So the biggest priority with the cloud is price below, above or below the cloud. That's number one. So until that pans itself out, we're neutral, just like no trade zone, as we're clearly seeing, like that is the perfect embodiment of massive chop up and down on both sides from like 10.7 to 9.4. So as we stand now, everything is bearish except where we are in the cloud. So like if we drop below the cloud, then I can definitively like, okay, this is short entry territory. But I'm seeing a lot of people who are like super bearish up here, like Nick is probably Johnny.
Yeah.
Like everybody's super bearish. And I don't understand. To me, like it's more of a coin flip, if anything. Like this could go either way. I think it's bullish, definitely, because we're consolidating. We're not, you know. But if we break 9.4, which is below the cloud, then we go down for a while. But I'm not gonna set up a short here and like, you know, be this hero thinking like we're going to go to 6K or something.
Yeah.
But on the flip side of that, you could take a straddle position where you're long and short with stops. Like you're long with a stop below 9.4, you're short with a stop above 10.7. Like that's a pretty wide range we're in right now, but I think upside and downside is definitely pretty big enough.
Yeah, I agree too. And honestly, option straddle would be my favorite, depending on availability and how they were priced, where an options straddle is where you both go long call and long put, meaning you're betting on both ways, right, from an at the money position. And if you do out of the money, that's more like called a strangle. But the strangle is a little cheaper, like if the options premium's high, but you do expect a significant move. That's kind of one of the things I was looking at. But of course, and then we'll shift into the news from here, because if you're an American right now, trading options can be quite difficult. If you're not American, you can trade on Deribit to your heart's content with options, at least for Bitcoin and Ethereum. Those markets for Deribit are fairly liquid. And we have news this week that CME is the Chicago Mercantile Exchange is opening up an options market, which is a big deal for providing legitimate infrastructure for people that maybe both trade options and futures and things like that, kind of a proper hedging environment or speculative environment for legacy market traders having those options on CME. And so you could trade that strangle or straddle on CME soon. When is it, Josh? Do you know when they're going to start?
They said Q1 2020, which might mean 20, but I don't think.
So you can't do it yet. If we're still in a massive consolidation pattern in 6 months, then you can do it.
Yeah, you can't do it yet. But it's funny, like they launched the futures in December or January.
Futures were December because that was the top of the market.
Yeah, so like it'd be funny if they launched this options thing again and it's another like macro top to the market.
It's possible.
It's possible. In Q1, historically, we drop, especially like with the tax concern coming up. If people did well this year, which a lot of people did.
They don't have to sell.
It's just like you don't have other stuff. I mean, most people, I don't know. Like a lot of people, a lot of traders who do well in crypto have to sell crypto to pay taxes, you know?
Yeah. If a significant portion of your net worth is in crypto, then In order to pay crypto taxes, you got to sell crypto. So it's this virtuous cycle of taxation.
Yeah, it's sad, at least for America and elsewhere, and specifically.
Yeah. So that is kind of a big news item. Also in the land of, and we want to make this mostly a news episode, so unless you have other big notes on price stuff or trading stories, then we'll dig into some more stuff. Another from the realm of institutional products and whatnot, the VanEck ETF application was pulled, which is not surprising because they also kind of front ran pulling that with their own. It's like basically like the same thing as GBTC, right? But it's their version of it. So what do they call it? The quasi ETF, which was fake, as Jake Chervinsky said in the previous interview I did with him. He talked about this product a little bit. But what do you know about what VanEck has got going on between yanking the ETF and putting this other product out there?
Well, I'm assuming they knew that the ETF application was going to get.
Yeah, no doubt.
Decided to pull it like they sort of did in February, right? And then they blamed it on like government shutdown or whatever.
Yeah.
So they're sort of like playing games, these political games with the SEC or CFT. It's SEC, yeah.
Yeah, they'd rather pull than be denied.
Right. The optics on that are probably better, especially when they already have the 144A thing released, like GBTC, like Pink Sheets. I don't really know what exactly it is. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, talking to Gabor, like, they're just going to keep trying to go full steam ahead on this thing. And institutions are excited about products being available, but mainly it's an education thing. The custody, they're worried about accounting. They are worried about like this 24/7 market. Like how do we price stuff? What's volume like? It's unregulated. Like there's all these issues that to us who are native crypto traders don't even think about at the institutional level. These are definitely preventing them from entering with Uberin.
Yeah. It does seem like there might be some structural advantages that Jake talked about to VanEck's new securitized Bitcoin thing, non-ETF ETF. But yeah, the ETF, I mean, I think Jake said the other one he thinks is going to get denied as well. He gave some pretty good reasons for that. What's the timeline on that? October?
Yeah. I mean, they're all we talk about like they're all going to get denied until BitMEX and Tether are gone. Like that's just like
until they're gone.
Word on the street is like, you know, the BitMEX and the Tether situation is not something that the government's like. I mean, clearly CFTC is going after BitMEX for however long now at this point for what? Who knows? But, you know, we can speculate that it's going to be a big, big fine or something.
So basically,
yeah, I mean, that's the reality. Like unless this unregulated, like derivative stuff is cleaned up, I think in their mind, like they're just saying, forget about it. You know, even though JPM just got nailed for manipulating metals markets for years.
A couple of people went to jail or got charged with crimes so far, haven't they?
Well, yeah. Yeah, they have. So, you know, it is what it is. But yeah, it's hard to like fathom a world where Tether doesn't exist and we have an ETF and we're like bullish, because Tether is such a massive portion of the crypto ecosystem from like an on-ramping perspective. So I don't know, maybe you gotta break some eggs to make an omelet, so maybe maybe that Tether finally closing shop is like the nail on the coffin for an ETF approval. I don't know,
I have a hard time believing in Tether just going away.
I agree. I don't know what like how did that even like occur? What would happen? You know, I don't know. I don't know what that would look like structurally. I have no idea. But yeah, that was just like a hypothesis of stuff. Because weren't those two things mentioned in the first denial of the whatever that the SEC sends out? Like
I don't recall. But I mean,
Jay Clayton is always out there saying like this is unregulated. We need surveillance. Blah blah blah. You know, the usual garbage that he spouts. But
yeah, I mean, I could imagine if one of your concerns is, hey, this market is you know, really too easy to manipulate by single parties. Those are two of the largest single parties that are trying to operate in a mostly unregulated manner that could influence the price and therefore kind of a non-starter for the ETF conversation. So I get that completely.
I mean, that's, and it's clearly the case. I mean, we we dropped like that 11 o'clock to p.m. 5%, just like out of nowhere, you know?
Yeah.
It's like there are some issues. This is an immature market. Yes. Like I can understand their trepidation for approving an ETF, but at least in the current state of the market, I think long term it's inevitable, but you know.
Yeah. I don't really see a point in why you would do it if you were in their position. Like it's a risk. Like the only real draw is to say, oh, well, we want to attract, you know, these, I guess, younger investors or like less traditional investors that are willing to trade in these types of things. But I don't know. There's not a lot of upside if you're the regulator, because if things go wrong, the blame is on you.
But like the CME stuff, I haven't heard of any issues on that, you know, but it's institutional, so it's a little different.
It's institutional. It's not like you're not going to have retail folks buying up 5 BTC contracts on CME. It's cash settled. Like it's kind of an independent operator. It's not precisely correlated to whatever's happening on spot markets and stuff.
But look at the other ETFs that are like complete garbage, you know?
Oh yeah, there's like tons of them. Like
the CBD ETFs, the whatever tobacco ETF, whatever, you know, XYZ ETFs. Like there are much worse ETFs arguably out there than having a Bitcoin ETF would be, you know?
Yeah, even the ones that are in like more normal markets, like in the gold market, I've goofed around with one called Nugget, which is like a 3x gold ETF, but it's the correlation is trash. Like it's not a great reflection of gold. There's tons of critics for that ETF and others, and much less whatever these ones are that you're talking about in like the CBD land. That's kind of crazy to me too. But I don't know. I mean, that seems like so long until those types of questions are settled. Maybe we'll just be having that ETF conversation for years. So,
but like BACT is coming, and that to me is better than an ETF. I don't know.
I think because of who's behind BACT, because mm-hmm. I mean, it's, you know, it's an actual gigantic exchange. So that's great.
And anybody who's plugged into ICE is plugged into like able to just trade BACT right away. So there's no like on-ramping.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some like back office stuff, accounting stuff, but
and even beyond that, like you want retail traders having access through an ETF, but if Fidelity and TD Ameritrade and whoever else, they're all bringing it to their platform in their own right, then mm-hmm. all those same people will have access through those. Like they don't have to make a new account. They just use their same, whatever they're using for trading now. I think going around the ETF through all these other products is one possible way. We just see, you know, these routes for anybody to get involved that wants to get involved. Hey, I want to dig into a crazy story because I had never really heard of this person. Certainly had not heard of anything around this issue or case, but the Department of Justice brought extortion charges against, quote from CoinDesk, an early advisor to Ethereum and T0, Steven Narayoff. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. how you...
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So he was behind Casper Labs. They've dumped him. And some other stuff. He was involved in a whole bunch of ICOs, and this extortion case is in relation to his involvement in an ICO that raised something like 70,000 Ethereum in 2017. It was like $30 million, and he was demanding 30,000 of those Ethereum as his cut, which is 40% or something. It's insane. But there was like so much crazy stuff that went down in this. Like he...
Allegedly. But the details are interesting, definitely.
Yeah. So let's see. The Jane Doe, they didn't name the company, although I think both of us have good ideas for who this company is. Whoever was, you know, this person behind it, they went to his home and like stayed there at some point. I guess it was a large place. And one of his cronies, some guy named Hadley, something like that. Laddie? I don't know how you pronounce their name. Anyway, they like woke them up in the middle of the night and demanded money. Like some weird stuff going on. And like they threatened them, all this stuff. This person left that company, got totally out of all of this. But like just kind of a classic extortion case, and they have charges filed against them. And they were involved in this guy was involved in a whole lot of ICOs. Like if you look at his company, the Alchemy one,
mm-hmm.
there's I took the screenshot of like 20 projects they were involved in that are pretty well known. And who knows what happened? Like, was this regular behavior, or did they just do this with company one that's noted in this extortion case? Because it's freaking crazy.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. Like, I feel like you can't do something like that knowing it's not a crime? Because not only is it just like morally wrong, but obviously there are consequences for that. And yeah, like he was early on ETH too. Like,
yeah, this person was probably very rich before they did any of these ICO deals, and got very, very rich because of these ICO deals. Because just as like he was just marketing them, I guess, or like putting them out in his network for pre-sales and demanding a third or more of the funding, which is crazy. So this is like just peak greed, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. And like, I don't think Vitalik said anything about the case, but he was pretty close with Vitalik as well. Like, Vitalik is, according to him, like a story that I heard him give was like Vitalik was living at his house for a little while.
Yeah.
While he was like coding Ethereum in the early days. So
this ICO founder is not the only person.
No, like I think he was like an incubator type guy.
It's not weird that someone was staying at his house.
No, apparently it's a very nice house. And, you know, like you said, like the guy's already rich. So
yeah.
Like what's the, I don't know. Yeah, I don't understand.
He's like the guy in Silicon Valley, the redhead.
Yeah. Yeah. A little bit.
Except maybe a little more extreme.
I mean, I've met him. He seems normal. He seemed like any weirdo in Ethereum, you know, like nothing out of it. Like you and me, you know, like, so I don't know.
To my knowledge, I've never extorted anyone.
No, I'd have to agree with you there for my own personal behavior.
Like, I can't even fathom thinking to do anything like this, like saying, you know what? You know what's right? What's right is me helping you raise $30 million and then you give me 40% of it. And I like demand it while you sleep in my home and wake you up and threaten you. It's freaking crazy. It's just, that's all I got. I can't really come up with any better terms. It's just nuts.
Well, when you feel victimized, you take extreme measures. And that's clearly what he thought he was. He was being victimized.
Yeah. Well, he's living on a different planet.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yeah. I honestly, no words for that.
His
I had heard rumors about this months ago before this came to light, and I just thought it was like hyperbole, but it turns out it's legitimate.
So according to court documents, this is in the CoinDesk article, and I think CoinDesk broke this in whatever way. Nariyov claimed Laddy, however you pronounce his crony guy, was a former government agent who could carry firearms through airports. On separate occasions, told Jane Doe that he had been shot at and had killed people, that he had taken down a head of state, and that he had been a part of the Irish Republican Army, the National Security Agency, the Central Intelligence Agency, and the FBI. So, yeah, there you go.
Definitely a strong man. What's the word? The guy who goes and cleans stuff up?
Yeah, your fixer?
Your fixer, I guess.
That's what except not like the Cohen lawyer type. This is more fisticuffs. Physical.
Yeah.
So there's that. So Nariyov was also on T0's board, Overstock's thing. Overstock CEO also resigned in a blaze of glory, sold all his stock recently. So that seems like a stable place.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of stuff going down.
Yeah, with, as much good as I've heard about T0, like being really going the extra mile trying to get this whole security token thing going, like, they got some characters. Yeah, nobody's
going to want to touch that now, that's for sure.
I wouldn't.
Whether you're an enterprise fund manager or a retail trader, buying and selling cryptocurrencies successfully requires price discovery you can rely on. Brave New Coin's liquid indices provide trusted US dollar prices for Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Ripple. Featuring end-of-day or intraday outputs, you can count on the BLX, ELX, and XRPLX for accurate US dollar pricing for smart contract oracles, settlement price discovery, net asset valuation, and performance analysis. Visit bravenewcoin.com to find out more.
All right, so there's a couple of all-time highs that we wanted to note, Bitcoin metrics, hash rate, and SegWit usage. Both at an all-time high rate. Bullish, bearish, doesn't matter. What do you think?
I think it's massively bullish to me. Like, it says there are people who believe in the future of Bitcoin enough to spend millions and millions of dollars creating these ASICs and attempting to get ROI on them. Like the miners are separate. Like, I'm talking about the people who make the ASICs. Like, that takes some
real
cojones to, like, go to the foundry and, like, get a contract for these things. Like, this is some real deal money. And I didn't realize there were 6 ASICs that came out in September, sort of out of nowhere. This website I use, ASIC Miner Value, like, they're usually pretty good at, like, previewing, like, upcoming ASICs, like, profitability and whatever.
It's funny because I don't hear anything about hardware anymore now that, Bitmain
is
so out of the picture. But there's still other people developing hardware. But like you say, this requires an enormous investment. If you're going to create anything that's going to be economically competitive, like you have to create so many of them that you bring the price down to be able to make it competitive. So yeah, the fact that there's a lot of stuff going on, I guess there's whole new models, nothing Bitmain related, nothing Dragon, whatever it was called. So like just a whole bunch of other stuff, huh?
Yeah. Let me just pull it. InnoSilicon is a big one. Bitmain's got two coming in November, actually. But yeah, no. So these September ASICs, they weren't on the Ebang Canon Strong U. They weren't on this website. That's why they just came out of nowhere. But then when I saw that, and I'm seeing hash rate coming to above all time highs, you know, week over week over week, that makes total sense. Like we're getting all these new ASICs into the ecosystem, and not only that, but as the ASICs are being produced, typically they're used by the mining manufacturer. At least Bitmain has a history of that. Yeah. I don't know about the other
companies.
At least
for a bit. Like
it's definitely not, I don't know, I guess it's an industry accepted practice for a lot of these companies, but at least Bitmain, which is not, like it's not what should happen. If I'm buying miners from Bitmain, I don't want them using them before I do, sort of thing.
Yeah, I would say it seems kind of messed up.
Yeah, it's pretty shady. But like this is, you know, Butterfly Labs is another example of this that did this, who's now way, way out of business. But yeah.
Well,
because you got to think, like, there's a time lag between the order, the manufacturing process, the shipping process. Like, there's some massive ROI loss from somebody who's buying these as hash rate continues to increase. And the miners are like, or the producers, mining producers, ASIC producers, mm-hmm. are just like, whatever, we're going to use them ourselves.
So all time highs there, ASICs doing things. Bitcoin generally fundamentally seems like it's in pretty firm bullish territory. I've been enjoying something recently. I want your take on it. You know, a lot of Bitcoin maximalists are making fun of Ethereum people because they're saying over this whole scalability thing, like talking about Ethereum's hypocrisy with, saying Ethereum can't scale. Now Ethereum people are saying it was never meant to scale.
Yeah, that's ludicrous.
It is. But still, like, I don't know. Bitcoiners giving Ethereum a hard time about scaling. That's been a problem in Bitcoin land for a long time.
But it wasn't sold out of the gate at a 70% pre-mine telling people it was scalable.
Sure. Know? Sure.
That's Bitcoin. Yeah. But ETH was.
But like there wouldn't be 100 other projects trying to be scalable Ethereum if it wasn't basically common knowledge that Ethereum wasn't particularly scalable.
Well, it's common knowledge now, but it wasn't sold like that.
It wasn't sold that way in 2016. Right. That's what you mean.
Right. If you look at, so here's the thing with the fees, like are fees good or bad? Make a decision. Are daily fees good or bad? Make a decision. And then it's like pick a narrative and stick to it. Like you can't be like fees are good now because we have more fees than Bitcoin, even though this stuff isn't scalable and like gas costs are through the roof.
Yeah, but now, so Ethereum people are saying high fees and clogged networks are good, which was a classic Bitcoin argument too for a while because it
was a classic argument against Bitcoin in like December 2017, right? When things were clogged, it's like, oh, this isn't going to scale. It's awful. The context didn't matter, which is the bigger problem here. The context at that time was fees are high because the network's being spammed with zero fee transactions, which is filling up the mempool and pushing fees higher and higher and higher.
And now now Ethereum's being clogged by Tether.
Right. So now we come to Tether. All of a sudden, fees are good and why fees are high doesn't matter. It's like, well, if you look at the fees, number one is it's not Tether anymore. It's actually, at least in the past 30 days, it's this thing called Fairwin, which is some sort of betting thing.
So one betting application is slowing down the entire Ethereum network?
Well, there's a few apps. You can check it on ethgasstationinfo.info. But so right now, as we sit, number one is this Fairwin gambling thing. Number two is Tether. Number three is this Maximine coin, which is a farm mining, what is it called? Something mining thing, like a scam. Number four is Chainlink, which is fine. IDEX, which is an exchange. That's number five. Nest, scam. Teller, scam. ATV banknote, probably scam. Big O2, scam. Number 10, MakerDAO, which is fine. Number 11, 5GH, probably scam. 12, Token Long, scam. 13, another DICE thing. Like, you can go down this list, and most of this stuff is scams, at least 80%.
I've only heard of four of the top 15.
Yeah, I mean, it's all it's like, yeah, we have Bancor and CryptoKitties and IDEX and
yeah,
Maker.
If you get into
like
the top 20, I know a couple more. 0x, number 23. Shout out 0x. It is just relentlessly pumping. And as someone who has prided themselves on the ability to swing trade 0x, like, I'm just totally not in on this move. And it's making me so sad.
I haven't looked at it, actually.
Oh, dude, it's up another 11% today. The weekly, damn. Let's see, on a weekly chart, it's gone from 1,600 sats up to 2,400. So it's gained, what, 50, 60% in 1 week?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it went and tapped the Bollinger Band midline, so the 20-week SMA is where it's found resistance. But yeah, it's like a big move that I did not catch on to. I was watching it. It's the same setup I tried with it the last time I did it, but I didn't play it this time. And boy, am I salty about that, especially considering the trades I said I did take to have missed that this round. I'm just like, ugh, brutal. Not sure I would be in it now. But yeah, so it's number 23.
I didn't even look at that chart for a while. But so yeah, like, what's the narrative? What's the context? Like, pick one. And you can't just say, like, fees are high, this is great, right? Like, why are fees high? Well, Tether migrated to ETH, which is great for ETH. But look at Omni. Like, Omni didn't skyrocket in value because it had all these Tether transactions.
Not at all. It was, like, basically dead as any other alt the whole time.
Right. And what's going to happen with ETH is that when these transactions get costly enough or take more time than another chain, is it's just going to be, they're going to switch to another chain like Liquid, which is private and free. Like, it's off, it's a side chain. So, like, that's really the end game. The end game isn't ETH. The end game is something else that's actually quicker, free, and private.
Okay. Like, side note, I want to get your opinion on this. This is something I guess Laura Shin brought up, and it's been a debate in that Ethereum community. Is some Ethereum people trying to deny this Ethereum as money concept and trying to call it something else? I don't understand this. Like, she was questioning why they wouldn't want to. My question is, isn't anything of value money in some form or fashion? Like, even if it's not like a direct unit of account or something, it's still a thing of value.
Yeah, money.
Yeah.
Like, is it method of exchange? Is it unit of account? Is it store of value? Is it all three? Is it none of them? Like
I may not think of Ethereum as a good store of value like Bitcoin, but I do think it's similar to other commodities, like, say, oil. You know, the very concept of gas and Ethereum is this. So maybe it's like range bound or something, but it's still a thing of value that's traded, and its price is important, even if it's not like money in your wallet, you know.
But that goes, to me, that goes back to context. Like, why is the value? Why did the value go up ever? ICOs. What are ICOs mainly? Just like VC pumping them scams, right? Like, why is Tether going up now? I don't know.
DeFi, man.
If DeFi was a thing, the number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of these gas station things would be, you know, DeFi stuff. It's not. Like, unless you're considering Tether.
I was about to say, it's Tether DeFi.
which I don't personally consider it DeFi. But
MakerDAO's number 10. So you got to get to number 10 with, what is this Ethereum spent thing? Is that on, like, transactions within that particular app?
Right. Okay. And that's the other thing. The magnitude of these,
like, yeah,
between number 1 and number 5 isn't even close. Like, this Fairwind Dice thing is at 811,000 USD spent in the past 30 days, whereas MakerDAO is at 33,000.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, all of these values are heavily inflated because the network is super full. So, like, this is just going to keep going up and up and up until scalability or transactions go down. But if we go to pending, which I haven't looked at in a while, but ETH pending was at over 100,000 and just, like, sitting there for a long time.
Yeah. I think this is actually all kind of fun from a trader perspective. This is all fun for Ethereum because it means there's probably going to be significant volatility ahead as there are questions around what's what. Like, there's potential for people to flow into other Ethereum competitors if they're non-believers, or you know, the ability for Ethereum to go way up or way down depending on kind of the outcomes of these various battles. So I like kind of watching all this. I don't really give a crap about Ethereum in the first place. So
exactly.
So
what I was going to say.
If you just trade it, then great.
Right. Like, I don't, obviously, you know, my heart is with the Bitcoin mother corn, obviously. But as a trader, you know, all this stuff is valuable information.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not like so against Ethereum. I think there's a role for this kind of distributed application concept. But I think we're still so many years away from, like, proper uses of it that this 2019 Ethereum battle, I don't really think it's so important to the future of distributed computing and all that crap.
No, I think the bigger thing is like the hackery and the lying and the double face and the talking heads and the ETH maximalists who like waffle back and forth. Like, you know, things are going to be, like you said, completely different in a couple months when, pick XYZ metric and they'll point out to that one instead. Like, it's just funny.
All right, let's dig into this Coinbase Binance relationship.
Give my heart rate back down here.
Yeah. For one, I think we can just go ahead and qualify that everything Coinbase is doing is probably in relation to getting their ass kicked by Binance in one way or the other.
Oh, for sure.
And so one thing they're doing is they put out some tweet with another, I don't know, dozen or more altcoins, some of which I'd heard of, but they just haven't been listed in 2 years, like Filecoin or Definity. Others I've never heard of in my life, but they're considering listing them. This is at the same time that Binance US is finally launching, and Binance just like put BNB in there, even though like there's no way it really got through any kind of review for what is a security, in my opinion. I think both Coinbase and Binance are totally going all in on ask for forgiveness later and have some sort of crappy legal justification for why you did what you did and why that was okay. Am I wrong on any of this?
No, I agree with you on all points. The biggest thing, it's like, why do any companies in Silicon Valley IPO to unlock like investor liquidity, right? So they can sell their shares, right? So to me, like, all of this ICO listing for products that are for companies that don't even have a product yet is just laughable, criminal, like any of these adjectives. Can you imagine like raising $1 million off of a piece of paper, an idea, not having a blockchain or a product and then listing it and then people trading it and investing in it? Like, I don't understand.
Except not a million. They're doing it with 100 million.
Yeah, it's right. Like, this isn't like, you know, lemonade stand money. This is real deal. Massive amounts of money being sloshed around here.
Yeah, it's awesome because like the 2017 euphoria of raise 10 million and then be worth 100 million out of the gate is gone. So like now they're raising, now they're raising 100 million and they're like praying still worth 100 million when it's listed. You know, it's like, what's the goal here? Unless you have some kind of Algorand style horrible structure for retail buyers and you just fleece them all upon listing.
Right. And look at Hashgraph. That's a perfect example. Like,
they're I don't even know anything about that one. But
I don't either. But they're touting this massive bloated market cap because they sold XYZ in private round and it's down like 50% since listing. I don't know.
But the private round folks are still way up, right?
Oh, of course. Like, they're already out probably at this point. Like, they sold it, you know, as soon as it was listed, I'm guessing, if the tokens were unlocked. But it's like, how many times does this have to happen until they stop listing stuff or ICOs just stop or people stop giving ICOs money and realizing, like, especially at a retail level, like this stuff, most of this stuff is never going to amount to anything.
You know what I keep seeing and what I keep being convinced of is like all this stuff is being built with these plans for how to fund teams and crap, you know, corporations behind them, building them, VCs. It makes me wonder, like, isn't the market just really demanding a Ethereum style, you know, some kind of computing platform, whatever, bring in all the tech you want, but like just to be done on a completely fair basis where it's like fairly launched, it's fairly distributed, it doesn't have any pre-mine or whatever you want to call it, like everything is earned over time, Bitcoin style. Like, isn't there demand for that? Why is no one willing to do that? Because couldn't you still make money off of it in the long run if you commit to the ecosystem, you build out the ecosystem, and you know you earn your tokens over time, and as the thing is more used, then it's more adopted. Like, am I just in like some kind of utopia that doesn't exist in thinking that would be accepted?
Yeah, you're in fantasy land.
But people why?
Because they want immediate returns. They want to be millionaires overnight. You know,
people creating the projects and committing research or whatever.
They want a blank check with no strings attached to do whatever they want.
There's got
to
be people that already have
money.
Look
at Filecoin. Look at Filecoin. Right? I'm sure they're doing stuff. I'm sure they're, you know, I'm sure they have a great team of people, whatever. But they raised X amount of money, no strings attached, and X years later, they're still don't have a product, right?
Yeah, but there has to be somebody that's all in on this distributed computing, whatever we're calling it, this concept. And they know that that's the only one that would like really work, even if the tech's not perfect. Like, say it's the current Ethereum technology, even.
That doesn't even matter, though. look at all of the, even the proof of work, early proof of work stuff. Almost all of them have a pre-mine, like ETH at 70%.
Yeah, I'm saying, what if they don't? What if you got somebody rich enough to not care and they're willing to build out the network and bet on it by buying the tokens and stuff and themselves or mining
them? So you mean Zcash?
No. Zcash is getting 20% plus reward. It's like an ICO in perpetuity.
So you mean like XRP? No, they're not proof of work.
Yeah, but XRP is fully minted. Like I'm saying, they don't have anything. Their only way to get it is to buy it or earn it in the
right. But if you have two routes of doing this, one is I'm having a lot of money instantly, and the other is over time.
Yeah, I would
be responsible.
I guess if I was a user of the network, I would prefer the Zcash model, even though like it's this consistent bleed. I think 20% is insane. But like, say it was like 5%, or 3 or 1. I'd be more interested in that model versus like print it all at the very beginning.
Dash, DCR, NEM.
Yeah.
A lot of these have like a treasury model.
Decred, I think Decred is a really good example, except they're more like in the Bitcoin realm of money and not computing, right?
Yeah, they're kind of like hybrid proof of stake. I don't know. I actually like the treasury part because then the network is funding development over time. I don't know what their treasury percentage is. It might be like 3%, 5%, whatever it is. Like, it's not 20.
But right? They didn't have an ICO or anything, did they? I mean, like, they airdropped tokens. I don't know where those came from. But, like, I don't understand. I don't know enough about Decred to know. But, like, it seems a little more up the alley of what I'm talking about. Something just like not, hey, here's a billion tokens. We're a company. We printed this crap and we're going to dump it on you. But by the way, it's the future of computing.
Right. And nobody, like, look at Link. They're being accused of dumping a bunch of stuff at the top.
Accused.
manipulating whatever, who knows?
Dumping on noobs after the pump. That's what they did.
Exactly. Well, yeah.
That's end game. That's the problem. That is the end game. The product is not the end game. The product.
I agree.
Its liquidity is all that anyone cares about.
Right, which is why they're trying to list this stuff as fast as they can before they have a product which fails and they don't have any value, so there's that's all they're trying to do.
Which is why the
Coinbase stuff is so upsetting.
I saw something funny. The girl's name, our Asia liaison, Obi-Wan.
Dovey Wayne.
Obi-Wan. Yeah. Wayne, whatever her name was. She said something funny about how like the Zilliqa CEO and CTO have both left the product and like it still trades, And she was like, hey, it's decentralized now. I was just like, oh my gosh.
Well, that's the other thing you'll see is like top members of projects post ICO.
Yeah, they peace
rotating
out.
Rotating into something new. Like EOS is a perfect example.
Your favorite.
They had several.
He's your favorite.
Several people at the top leave only to go and create their own project.
But we don't necessarily hear like, hey, do they still own all their tokens? I'm sure they keep a bag that they can still dump on people that in a project they now have nothing to do with. So I'm just like, I can't believe we're still doing that. I guess that's what I'm getting at.
Well, people don't care about product. They only care about making money, right? Greater
yeah.
fool. This is classic VC 101 to me. I don't know. I do not view VCs in a positive light.
It kind of tells me that there's still plenty of room for these, especially these large, like pre-funded networks to just get smoked and for that rotation of dead tokens to continue.
Well, it's better for them to be in purgatory because then they don't have a project to evaluate, right? It's definitely better for them to ICO without
to never release the
project or never release anything, because as soon as they do, then people attempt to put value on it, and then odds are the value is going to drop. But
yeah, I did. So I'll fess up to one. I did one where I bought a very small amount of a token off of somebody OTC pre-distributions. Like I guess they had an allocation and I just picked up a piece of it, right? Thinking it was going to be like less than a month turnaround. And then they didn't distribute the tokens for like 2 years. And they finally came out a few weeks ago. And I forgot about it until just now. Like I haven't even looked at it. I literally wrote it off as if it was worth zero. It probably will be worth zero. It's still not listed anywhere, but like they're totally incentivized to take the money and then not distribute a token for 2 years until everybody forgets about it. But somebody still funded all these people like in a big way, like these VCs and stuff. They got to dump those tokens. They got, $30, $50, $100 million invested in these things and they're just non-existent. They're in no man's land.
Yeah. And that's for the best, right?
How is that for the best? If I was one of these
VCs, not for the VC, no.
Yeah,
but
that long, like the Filecoin scenario, that's too long. And Filecoin wasn't the one I did. I don't want to say it because I don't know anything about the project anymore.
But that's why, to me, like, all these VC crypto relationships are just, we use the word incestuous a lot. But looking at that Coinbase list, and I'm thinking, okay, which VCs are part of Coinbase that, going all Bitfinex here, trying to like map all this stuff out, which VCs or ex-Coinbase employees are invested in those tokens, like specifically Polychain? Like, what does their portfolio look like?
I mean, it's got to be relationally based, like, Coinbase, right. San Francisco, Love Fest.
Right. And that's why, we talked about ZRX for months or a year even before it got listed on Coinbase.
Totally incestuous. But,
like, inevitable that was going to happen just based on the team, based on the proximity to the people. And this looks like the same thing. Like, some of these I'd never even heard of before. And I've been around the block, Brian.
You've been around the block.
Like Mobilecoin, Oasis. A lot of these I actually heard of and know what the project is, but I don't know. And it's not like they're listing these on exchange to sell. This is just custody or whatever.
But now it only shows 8 on there. Was that all there was? I thought there were more. I saw another image.
Yeah, I see like 20 on here.
Okay, so I'm looking at something that's not the whole list.
I don't know. I just got.
Oh, this is from August 5th. I'm not looking at the newest. Yeah, yeah.
I sent it to you, but no, it was super triggering.
Let's read them out because it's fun.
Okay.
Let's see. Avalanche. Never heard of it.
Never heard of it. Nope.
CeeLo. Never heard of it.
I think that's a lending platform. Sorry.
Chia. Not the pet. Never heard of it.
Chia is Bram Cohen's project. Bram Cohen BitTorrent sold it to Tron.
God.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing, actually.
Coda, I think I've... I don't know. I have a code editor named Coda from years ago, but it's completely different. Dfinity, heard of it.
I don't know what it is.
Big hype Ethereum killer. Filecoin, heard of it.
Everybody's heard of that one. That was one of the biggest ICOs before EOS, right?
Yeah, I think that one was 200 million or something, 250 back in the early 2017. I don't know.
Dollars per day, that might be the highest. Because EOS was a year long.
Yeah, because that one was very quick. Handshake, I've vaguely heard of this. Is this a Internet of Things thing?
I think it's a naming service. I actually know Stephen.
A domain name thing.
Yeah, Stephen McKee, who's an advisor for them.
Yeah, I think you're right. Because I talked about usability of Bitcoin on Twitter one day, and I think some people were shilling Handshake in response. Kadena, never heard of it.
Never heard of it. Look at that logo.
Just a K. I love it. Just a K. Mobilecoin, never heard of it. Near, never heard of it. Nervos, never heard of it.
I've heard of it. I have no clue what it is.
Oasis, never heard of it. Orchid, never heard of it. Have you heard of either of those?
No.
Polkadot,
that one.
I feel like I've heard that one. I still don't know what it is.
That's the infamous, what's his name? Early ETH person as well, but they locked up like $3 million.
Mm. Solana, I've seen something about this, but I have no memory of it.
They're a solar coin. No, I have no idea.
Space Mesh, definitely never heard of it. And then one of the great ones is the Telegram token, which I still am unsure of why they plan on it being anything, but they raised 800 million.
I thought they raised a billion.
A billion?
I don't know.
Who cares? Who knows?
It's just money, man.
That's an astonishing amount of money. Like, what?
What does Telegram need $1 billion for? I don't know.
Is Telegram worth $1 billion as a corporation, like aside from any token thing?
Are they publicly traded?
No, it's just a chat app like WhatsApp was. I guess it's just...
This is why I want Discord to do an ICO, because I think Discord is just amazing.
Yeah. See, I like Telegram, but I don't think it's worth it. It's a chat app, Like, how can it really be worth a whole lot?
Look at WhatsApp. They're worth X billion dollars. Yeah. Stripe just came out saying it's worth whatever billion dollars,
Well, Stripe is valuable. They process e-commerce payments every day, every second.
All right. Well, people talk on Telegram every second.
Yeah. I don't know. Dash listed on Coinbase. I forgot about that.
Yeah, it did.
Did it do anything?
Odd listing. Let's take a look. I think it went up and down like they typically do, like Tezos. Yeah. Straight up, straight down. Look at Tezos. As much crap as people are giving me on Twitter.
Are you saying it's underperformed or overperformed?
No, it's straight down since the listing. Like, this is the embodiment of
a Coinbase
VCs.
Listing.
Yeah, it's the embodiment of a Coinbase listing, but also like VCs and whoever else.
My favorite is still Algo, which we spent a whole half episode on. You remember?
Yeah, I do.
What was the magic price on that one? Like 30 cents for a refund or something? It's below that now. Whatever it was.
I don't know. It's all a joke.
It was just straight down.
But at least for Tezos, they have a network-ish, and they're doing stuff-ish. 80% of that network is being staked. Like, I don't know, looking into Tezos a little more when I did the article for BNC. Check that out. Shameless self-plug.
Shameless.
It sounded okay. Like, but is it worth what it's worth? Probably not. Who am I to say?
Ooh, algo. 340 on Binance, down to 32 cents today. The weekly is just a vertical move down. But hey, they had some refund guarantees in there, so, you know, can't lose money. All right, so...
Yeah, we have Binance US coming up, too.
This is totally a, you know, trying to keep up with Binance thing.
Yeah.
Binance listed a pretty conservative slate of tokens, like just your big caps, except for BNB.
The usual suspects?
Yeah, all the usual suspects. Like, this could basically be Bitstamp, except for the fact of listing BNB. Anything we need to be thinking about, worried about, laughing about?
I don't think so. I don't think anybody who's already on all these other US platforms has any interest in going on that one.
There's no reason to trade on. There's no reason as an American to trade on Binance US, correct?
I don't have any plans to onboard there. I mean, the argument is like liquidity is better than Polo probably or Bittrex, but I don't see any
reason. There's no advantage as much as we like to hate on Coinbase. Like, there's no advantage over Coinbase.
Other than liquidity, volume, UI, you know, these sort of things.
But
if you're already connected to Coinbase and all these other ones, I don't see why you would jump at the chance to connect to Binance US.
Yeah. Okay. Well, good job, Binance. Still bearish on Binance.
We say that now, and it's going to be like
gigantic. The best
massive volume US. But like unlocking US investors or retail is huge for crypto because it's mostly US. But
yeah.
All right.
What are we missing?
I think that's it. Verablock added SegWit. So SegWit usage went way up.
So Verablock is still using a large percentage, like they're still responsible for a large percentage of Bitcoin transactions.
It oscillates between like 10 and 15%. It's like 13% right now.
But it's down from its heyday of like 30% before they officially launched.
When it started, we were in the doldrums of like October through March, and they were up to like 30 to 50% of the transactions.
Nice.
Zap released Jack Mahler's thing, released a Lightning on-ramping service, which is good. You know, I had a couple of people trying to use the Cash App stuff, and they couldn't actually buy Bitcoin on the app, so which, that was super weird.
Hmm. Yeah, I don't know anything about that. Interesting. All right, so Backed, September 23rd, right?
That's right. It's coming up.
Very, very soon. This week, basically this weekend. EOS Hard Fork, September 23rd. CME, the 27th, but that's...
That's the rollover of the contract, of the contract, April 1st contract.
Contract roll. So by the time we talk next, we'll see what kind of effect those have had on the Bitcoin market.
Yeah, I think in the near term, the CME rollover is actually the most important. I think Backed is going to be, you know, whatever. Like long term, it's going to be great.
But priced in right now.
Yeah, near term, I don't think it's going to really do anything.
All right, cool. Let's see. Have you got anything? What have you been writing about?
Stellar, Ripple, Bitcoin,
Stellar,
Tezos.
Ripple, Bitcoin. Stellar had a gigantic move, didn't it?
It did. It sort of retraced most of that, I think, at this point. It's not like ZRX, Chad, ZRX.
I'm so sad being on the sidelines for that, but there's no way I'm buying it right now.
You know why? ZRX, so I've contacted Coinbase for this, but ZRX, I cannot trade because when I created my account, I was in a different region than I am now.
Mm.
And that region is disabled. And even though I'm in a different region now with a different ID, they won't unlock that market for me. So I don't know what that's about. But
so you have nowhere to trade ZRX?
Well, I can trade it on Polo or whatever else.
Oh, yeah.
It's listed somewhere.
You can get filled over the course of a week.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
Anyway,
let's leave it there. Thanks for joining us, everybody, as we just rant about various news items. There's a lot going on. There is. I'm feeling next week we're going to be talking about a bunch of news too.
I feel like next week we're going to be talking about price more, but
we'll see. You think we move by the time we talk next?
I think so. Yeah.
Bullish or bearish?
I mean, I'm bullish.
Bullish until proven otherwise.
That's right. There you go.
Sounds good. All right, Josh, thanks for joining me. Everybody can catch you at Carpe Noctem on Twitter. Go read all your stuff at Brave New Coin. Thanks to Brave New Coin for being a partner for LedgerCast. Sign up to their newsletters. Check out the BLX and the ELX, XRP, LX, which are great liquid indices for charting those assets.
And BNC Pro, the portfolio thing, is coming out of beta.
They're
coming into beta.
Into beta. The wait list shall be fulfilled if you've done what we've asked and joined the wait list for BNC Pro already. then you'll be able to check out the beta. Yeah, it's I don't know.
I'm excited. Like, I've used it in the alpha, and I'm excited to use it when it's like fully live. But it's definitely a valuable tool.
Yeah, they didn't give me this talking point, but it, like, when I was trying it, it looked kind of like a it's kind of got this vibe of wanting to be the Bloomberg terminal of crypto. You think that's fair? Kind of, yeah. Snapshot
news charts, your portfolio, portfolio like aggregation management, that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's pretty slick. So
yeah, it is.
Everybody check out that. And you can go to letterstatus.com/BNC to hit that landing page. All right. Thanks, y'all. We'll talk to you later.
Monuments crumble in the blink of an eye. The easy river has just run dry. In a house of cards, I feel the breeze wound so tight I can barely